This is the Jeff Horovitz Show on 97.1 The Big Talker.
All I can say is, wow, check out this MIT study I'm going to get to on social distancing, plus Section 230 protections with Glenn Leese. The Jeff Horovitz Show starts now. I just read this study, MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, kind of a big deal. It's not like Uncle Earl's backyard barbecue survey here. This is MIT. Here's the title, and it's on CNBC.com. MIT researchers say you're no safer from COVID indoors at 6 feet or 60 feet in a new study challenging social distancing policies. Wait till you hear this. I'm going to spend time on this for at least the first segment here, because I'm going to read you this article. It's just wow. Stuff we've been saying for a long time here on the program, that the social distancing, and it gets into masks here as well, but that it just didn't make any sense, and it doesn't make any sense now going forward. So I'll get to that, folks, but welcome and thanks for listening. Jeff Horovitz here. Happy to be here with you today at the end of a very, very busy week. A lot of ground to cover, including Glenn Leist from WT Wealth Management. He'll join us our weekly market recap, although we tend to kind of tackle some big issues when it comes to the market. This week, we're going to talk about these social media giants. So anyone waiting in the wings to replace some of these big ones, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, things like that, as far as will they become the future MySpace? And what is Section 230? What protections are they afforded? And what does that mean going forward? There's a Senate bill in the Texas Senate that may put a cap on how these folks can just censor people. So we'll get to that with Glenn Leese. Plus, if you've got a comment, go ahead and get your comments in right now in the first 20 minutes of the show here. So I'd love to hear anything you want to talk about, any comments on this MIT research I'm going to get to. Get it in right now. Leave your comments, and then I should be able to get to them by the last maybe 10, 15 minutes of the show. Go ahead and get your comments in right now on the Just Wireless listener line, 877-971-3971. 877-971-3971. One more time. 877-971-3971. Get them in now, and I will try to get them on the program here towards the last 10 or 15 minutes. Also, you can send an email, and I'll try to look at those as well throughout the program. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. I was going to talk about the audit that's going on, but I'll get to that next segment. I'm looking at this article, CNBC.com. A pretty well-known website. Now, if I were to put this out there yesterday, or if I were to put this on YouTube or something, it would probably be taken down because I guess I'm not an MIT researcher. But I've been questioning the use of masks, and especially indoor policies here, and outdoor policies as far as COVID transmission in outdoor settings. I've been questioning that for a year now. But if you question it, you're a conspiracy theorist, you're a kook, and hashtag science, you will be deleted. Okay, so here's a CNBC article. MIT, that's Massachusetts Institute of Technology, big deal here. MIT researchers say you're no safer from COVID indoors at 6 feet or 60 feet in new study challenging social distancing policies. I'm going to try to get through this without too much commentary, but no, I probably won't. I'll probably get through like a sentence. Let me read that again. Here's the headline. You can look it up. You can read it. There's also a link to the actual study. MIT researchers say you're no safer from COVID indoors at 6 feet or 60 feet. I'm just going to read it. The risk of being exposed to COVID-19 indoors is as great at 60 feet as it is at 6 feet, even when wearing a mask. According to a new study by Massachusetts Institute of Technology researchers, who challenge social distancing guidelines adopted across the world. MIT professors Martin Z. Bazant, who teaches chemical engineering and applied mathematics, and John W. M. Bush, who teaches applied mathematics, developed a method of calculating exposure risk to COVID-19 in an indoor setting that factors in a variety of issues that could affect transmission, including the amount of time spent inside, air filtration and circulation, immunization, variant strains, mask use, and even respiratory activity such as breathing, eating, speaking, or singing. I'd probably add yelling because I may do that here in a minute. Bazant and Bush questioned the long-held COVID-19 guidelines from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the World Health Organization in a peer-reviewed study published earlier this week in Proceedings of the National Academy of Science of the United States of America. Peer-reviewed, keep that in mind. Quote, "We argue that there really isn't much of a benefit to the six-foot rule, especially when people are wearing masks," Bazant said in an interview. "It really has no physical basis because the air a person is breathing while wearing a mask tends to rise and come down elsewhere in the room, so you're more exposed to the average background than you are a person at a distance." And I've always wondered, when I go to a restaurant and have to put on the mask to walk in and then I sit down, I always thought the air was safer down there. But I guess apparently it's like a nuclear bomb, a mushroom cloud of your breathing, of your virus particulates, I guess, come down somewhere else, fallout, I guess. So you're not any safer across the room. Remember, I was telling you the story going to lunch with my dad a couple weeks ago, and we were sitting in the lobby with all these people, and we were like 12 feet away from them, and they're wearing a mask, and I'm just like waving. Then they come sit right down next to me and take off the mask. Anyway, back to this CNBC article of this MIT study. "The important variable the CDC and the WHO have overlooked is the amount of time spent indoors," Bazant said. "The longer someone is inside with an infected person, the greater the chance of transmission," he said. That makes sense. "Opening windows or installing new fans to keep the air moving could also be just as effective or more effective than spending large amounts of money on a new filtration system," he said. And I called bunk on this stuff. All these schools that have wasted gobs of taxpayer money and borrowed money from China and God knows where else, just money just printed. How many schools are putting in these expensive filtration system and businesses? This study's saying that it doesn't do nothing. You'd be better off opening your dang window, getting a little cross breeze, and putting a fan in. You'll buy a $30 fan and open your windows. Unbelievable. Bazant also says the guideline enforcing indoor occupancy caps are flawed. He said 20 people gathering inside for 1 minute is probably fine, but not over the course of several hours, he said. What our analysis continues to show is that many spaces that have been shut down, in fact, don't need to be. Wow. Tell that to the people in California still, in Michigan. Oftentimes, the space is large enough. The ventilation is good enough. The amount of time people spend together is such that those spaces can be safely operated, even at full capacity, and the scientific support for reduced capacity in those spaces is really not very good, Bazant said. Quote, "I think if you run the numbers, even right now for many types of spaces, you find that there is not a need for occupancy restrictions." Wow. It's just like unreal. Stuff we've been saying for a long time, and a lot of us, maybe a third of us in this country. Continuing on with the CNBC article on this MIT study, 6 feet social distancing rules that inadvertently result in closed businesses and schools are just not reasonable, he said, according to Bazant. This emphasis on distancing has been really misplaced from the very beginning. The CDC or WHO have never really provided justification for it. They just said, that is what you must do. And the only justification I'm aware of is based on studies of coughs and sneezes where they look at the largest particles that might sediment onto the floor, and even then, it's very approximate. You remember those simulations, right? They would show you, oh, here's the sneeze pattern. Look at this. You can certainly have longer or shorter range large droplets, Bazant said. Quote, "The distancing isn't helping you that much, and it's also giving you a false sense of security because you're as safe at 6 feet as you are at 60 feet if you're indoors. Everyone in that space is at roughly the same risk, actually," he noted. Unbelievable. Is it April Fool's? We're past that already. This would have been a good April Fool's joke here. April Fool's joke for us on a year. 2 weeks flatten the curve. Pathogen-laced droplets travel through the air indoors when people talk, breathe, or eat. It is now known that airborne transmission plays a huge role in the spread of COVID-19 compared with the earlier months of the pandemic, where hand washing was considered the leading recommendation to avoid transmission. Continue on. Those droplets, I got to read this all because this is like really, those droplets from one's warm exhalation mixed with body heat and air currents in the area to rise and travel throughout the entire room, no matter how socially distanced a person is. Let me fast forward ahead here a little bit, because this is a very lengthy article. I highly suggest you look this up. MIT researchers say you're no safer from COVID indoors at 6 feet or 60 feet in new study. I would recommend sharing this. The social distancing was all a bunch of bunk, according to this study and according to common sense here. Let me continue on. I'm skipping a couple paragraphs. Even with masks on, as with smoking, those who are in the vicinity are heavily affected by the secondhand smoke that makes its way around the enclosed area and lingers. The same logic applies to infectious airborne droplets, according to the study. When indoors and masks, factors besides distance can be more important to consider to avoid transmission. As for social distancing outdoors, okay, let's switch to outdoors now. Because on my way to the studio, I drove by someone. A young person, couldn't have been over 18, riding a scooter down the sidewalk. Nobody else there. The wind's blowing 20 miles an hour with a mask. And I'm just like, geez, if it's just a social statement, I guess, whatever. But you're not doing anything here, because here's what he says. Here's what this study from MIT says. As for social distancing outdoors, Bazant says it makes almost no sense, and that doing so with masks on is, quote, kind of crazy. Oh my God. Quote, if you look at the airflow outside, the infected air would be swept away and very unlikely to cause transmission. There are very few recorded instances of outdoor transmission. He said crowded spaces outdoors could be an issue, but if people are keeping a reasonable distance of like 3 feet outside, I feel pretty comfortable with that, even without masks, frankly. So what about the graduation I've been talking about? I've been telling you about how we're having limitations on graduation, and other schools aren't. Like Williams, for example, and other schools, I've gotten messages. No, they're not. They're just doing normal stuff now, because they realize this has all been just politicians and bureaucrats throwing crap up at the board, scaring the hell out of people, and trying to act like they're actually doing something to protect you when there was nothing that was going to protect you, at least when it comes to social distance. It's all a waste of time. Ridiculous. Anyway, what about those graduations? My kids Isabel's graduation, for example, an outdoor venue that holds 3,000 people normally, the capacity, they've reduced to 10% to 300. Did they read this study? Should I send them this study, this MIT study? Because I can't bring grandma and one of my kids and grandpa and everybody else in the family, because they think that it makes a difference. You got to be spread apart real far outside. Utter nonsense. Continuing on with the CNBC article, Bazant says this could possibly explain why there haven't been spikes in transmission in states like Texas or Florida that have reopened businesses without capacity limits. Yeah. Look at Michigan. Michigan's having a spike. They've done everything, every repressive thing possible. California too, although California's numbers are finally down. But Michigan's not. Let me finish this up. As for variant strains that are 60% more transmissible, increasing ventilation by 60%, reducing the amount of time spent inside, or limiting the number of people indoors could offset that risk. Bazant also said that a big question, two more paragraphs, folks. Thanks for sticking with me on this one. This is huge, because this is a big study that's peer-reviewed saying that the social distancing really did nothing and that masks are stupid outside. What was the exact word? He said it was kind of crazy. Kind of crazy. Bazant also said that a big question that is coming, imagine all hate mail the email this guy's probably getting. Bazant also said that a big question that is coming will be when masks can be removed, and that the study's guidelines can help quantify the risks involved. He also noted that measuring carbon dioxide in a room can also help quantify how much infected air is present and hence risk of transmission. Quote, we need scientific information conveyed to the public in a way that is not just fear-mongering, but is actually based in analysis, Bazant said. After three rounds of heavy peer review, he said it's the most review he's ever been through, and that now that it's published, he hopes it will influence policy. I sure the heck hope so. Good for these guys for doing this study. It's too bad it's taking a year plus to realize common sense here and what we've been talking about. If you just joined us, and I got to go to break, and thanks for sticking with me while I read this whole thing. CNBC article. I'll put it in the podcast show notes, a link. But if you want to look it up now, MIT researchers say you're no safer from COVID indoors at 6 feet or 60 feet. Go check it out. All right, still to come, We're going to talk with Glenn Lease from WT Wealth Management about Section 230 protections when it comes to social media giants and what does it mean going forward. Plus, let me get to some Arizona news here regarding the audit, regarding the election. So hang around for that, folks. Hang tight. Back in a minute. Well, it's just about that time of year for those outside projects to begin, and I really rely on my friends at HomeCo Lumber and Hardware, make sure I've got everything I need. First of all, I'll go to their drive-in lumber yard, and they have lots of people there to help you load things. Like, I usually buy their railroad ties there to help line this driveway that I've been working on for, it seems like, years. But they got a lot of people there to help you out. They employ something like 100 people in the Flagstaff area. So then I go inside to HomeCo, and there's plenty of people there to help me decide which nuts and bolts I need, or match that paint, or, you know, the plumbing aisle or electrical aisle. That can really suck you in, but there's experts there, people that really know their stuff at HomeCo Lumber and Hardware on Butler Avenue in Flagstaff. Plus, if you're a veteran, thank you for your service. Get 10% off with ID, plus dedicated parking spot out front. Check out my friends at HomeCo Lumber and Hardware for all your projects. HomeCo Lumber and Hardware on Butler Avenue in Flagstaff. All right, remember, if you want to get your comments in, go ahead and do it right now. You can do it two different ways. Leave your comments on the Just Wireless listener line, 877-971-3971. And I'm going to try to get those comments on air here in the last maybe 10, 15 minutes of the program. So if you want to comment on the MIT study regarding social distancing that just blew it away, if you missed that, look this up. I'm not going over it again because I got to hit on some statewide issues, but it is MIT researchers say you're no safer from COVID indoors at 6 feet or 60 feet. Look it up. I'll put it in the show notes when this is podcast as well. By the way, just going across the screen here, I'm still on that CNBC article breaking. CDC, FDA lift recommended pause on use of Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine. So, and let's read that one real quick. They are saying that U.S. health regulators lifted a recommended pause on the use of Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine, given state and local officials' backing to distribute the doses. CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices recommended on Friday continued use of the J&J vaccine. There you go. They had some reports of blood clots, remember, and they paused the distribution of it. So now they're going at it again. They say the benefits outweigh the risks, according to them. But, you know, who knows? Make your own decision. We went into the vaccine issue quite a bit earlier in the week. I'm not doing it again. People send me emails saying I need to be a cheerleader for it or a cheerleader against it. Now, you need to do your research, make your own decision, and do what's best for you and your family. That's the best recommendation I can give to you. Again, if you want to comment, get them in right now. I'd love to hear from you. Get these on air here, maybe the last 10, 15 minutes of the show, 877-971-3971. Also, you can email talkwithjeff@icloud.com. And even if you're listening back, sometimes this gets rebroadcast during the weekend, and also it gets put out on the podcast. If you're listening to that, get your comments in, and I'll get them on the next show. I'd love to hear from you. All right, a county supervisor and Democrats filed an injunction to stop the GOP audit of the Arizona election results. And I know they were supposed to have an emergency meeting. Let me check that real quick, because at last I checked, they were going to have an emergency meeting on trying to pause the Arizona audit. And actually, I'm on Arizona Central right here. Dems won't provide $1 million bond to pause, quote unquote, pause Arizona election audit. Let's see if we can get into this here a little bit. That's behind a paywall here. So it looks like they're failing at that attempt to do this. But what is the audit that's going on? I've spent quite a bit of time on this audit with the Senate President, Senator Karen Fan, and she's been really behind trying to get an audit of our elections and to make sure that our election process and the integrity of our elections is above is right where we want it to be, and that we all have confidence in our election, because there's a lot of people that don't. So I asked her when she was on the program, I've got a quick clip right here from Senate President Karen Fann, what's the harm here of doing this audit? Because now you have the Democrats that are trying to stop the audit and this county supervisor down in Maricopa. What's the harm? What's the downside here? I've been asking this question for a long time. You find nothing, okay, and then you get to these Democrats get to say, oh, see, I told you. You find something, then, okay, now we got something to correct. And what harm can that be? Anyway, Senator Karen Fann had this to say about that.
I have asked myself that for weeks and months here, because that's exactly right. Why wouldn't you want to prove election integrity?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want people to have 100% confidence in our electoral system? I have said from day one, you know, we have never, ever used the word fraud. We have never accused anybody whether it's the machines or the hardware or the software or anybody else. We have just said, and I have always said, I have tens of thousands of constituents in Arizona that have questions about our electoral system. And as a senator and as a Senate body, that is our job. We pass the election laws. We make sure they're being followed, and we change them if need be. So if we're not going to do this, who is? If their own organization, you know, the Maricopa County or any other of the counties or the recorders, if they're not willing to do it, who is speaking for the voters?
Yeah.
Who's speaking for our constituents? And it's so frustrating, Jeff, when I hear, you know what, it's like they're saying, you know, shut up and sit down. You don't deserve an answer, even though you're the taxpayer, you're the voter. And that's so wrong on so many levels.
So what this latest last ditch lawsuit was alleging was that Senator Karen Fann, that you just heard, she was on the program maybe 10 days ago or so, and Senator Warren Peterson, who's been on this program many, many times, that they're not providing the right security for the 2.1 million votes that are now being audited in the voting machines. It's all just bogus. They're trying to stop the process. And again, what harm can come here? Get the audit done. If you find something, you make corrections. If you don't, well, then everything was right. Everything was perfect. So what's there to hide? Anyway, another big issue that was hitting down at the legislature, especially on the Senate side, was SB, Senate Bill 1485. Here's another big one. Early voting list reform bill failed in the Senate. This was a bill that was sponsored by Senator Michelle Eugenie Rita. She's been on the program many times. I'll see if I can get her back on the program next week. It was a bill to try to clean up the voter rolls. Anyway, she was on recently, this was not too long ago, where she explained the nuts and bolts exactly of what she's trying to do, how she's trying to clean up this bill. And then I got a big update here because one of her colleagues on the Republican side actually helped crash Senate Bill 1485. But here's what it's all about.
So the nuts and bolts of the bill goes like this. We talked about vote by mail, and we have a vote by mail system that's very popular in Arizona. And it says if you voters haven't voted in four consecutive elections, you've missed four consecutive elections in a row, you'll be sent a notice saying, hey, do you still want to participate? You still want to get your ballot by mail? If you don't respond to that notice, you are removed.
Okay.
You've clearly demonstrated that you're not voting by mail. We have an obligation to have secure elections here in this state. You can sign back up if you want. You can certainly go vote in person early or day of. But you will be removed because you're not utilizing the voluntary program of receiving your ballot by mail and then, of course, voting by mail. If you're a casual voter and you're at some point over the course of the two election cycles voting, then nothing will happen. Nothing will change. You'll continue to receive your ballot automatically in perpetuity. But like I said, if you do miss four elections in a row, primary, general, and fail to respond to a notice, yes. You'll be removed.
Okay.
That's what the bill does. They do this in California. They're looking to do it in New Mexico right now. Those are D states. We are flanked by two D states. One state, New Mexico, trying to champion it through their legislature. Democrats in California already have it. They have it over a different time frame. It's four general elections, but you are at some point removed. That's all we're doing here in Arizona. Very balanced and reasonable. I wonder if the people who signed on to that letter opposing these bills have even read it. Because if you've read the bill, it's hard to believe you would be against such a mild, reasonable approach.
Okay, that was Senator Michelle Eugenie Rita. Her bill is now dead, and it's not the folks that were opposing it initially, which is all the Democrats opposed this bill, but there was also a lot of organizations, businesses in the state that were sending letters to Senator Rita saying, don't do this, and on and on. It blew up all over the place. But what caused the bill to die was actually a fellow Republican who was on the show, I think earlier this week we had her on, maybe it was last week, she's been on quite a bit, Senator Kelly Townsend. She actually voted, she was the one Republican to vote against this, that, and it killed it, because you got to keep in mind, the Senate is a 16-14 split. The Republicans have a narrow margin, so as soon as someone joins on with the Democrats, it's done. Now, I think this was more of a, and this is the reaction I'm seeing in some quotes from what she sent out, Senator Townsend, it's more of a reaction of she wants to see the audit. She wants to see the results of the audit. And here's what she said. This is from the Arizona Republic, that she wants to wait until the audit is complete, that we just referred to with Senator Karen Fann, before making any changes to Arizona election law. She put that warning out there. Quote, I mean it when I say I'm committed to fixing the problems in this election system in Arizona, even if it means my name is in the red on this board. She's saying is she doesn't want any of these election bills brought forward until the audit is complete. And when I talked to Senator Karen Fann, she said that's going to take several weeks. So I don't know how this is going to pan out, because we're getting to close to May here, and the legislative session winds down as you get close to May. And so these bills could die, never make it. Once you start finalizing the budget, folks start wanting to go home. I think there's even one, maybe on the House side, he's either on the House or the Senate now, where he serves in the National Guard, and then he has to leave at a certain time. So, and the majority, the House majority is only 31-29. The Senate majority is only, like I said, 16-14. So anyway, the voting reform bill to clean and purge the voter rolls is dead. And we'll see if any of the other reform bills make it through the process. All right, let's do this. If you've got any comments, go ahead and get them in right now. I will get your comments on air here. If you leave your comments on the Just Wireless listener line, 877-971-3971, 877-971-3971. Leave your comments. I'll get them on probably the last 10 or 15 minutes of the show. We're going to come back with Glenn Least with W2 Wealth Management. Let's talk Section 230 and what it means to these social media giants. And is there somebody that's going to replace it? Are enough people leaving? We're going to talk with Glenn Least about that. Back in a minute. All right, welcome back. Love to hear from you. Just Wireless listener line, 877-971-3971. Let's talk Section 230 when it comes to these big social media giants and publisher versus the protections that they have, people getting censored, things like that. And welcome back to the program. Our weekly market recap here, market roundup with Glenn Least from WT Wealth Management. You can check out Glenn at WTWealthManagement.com, WTWealthManagement.com. Hey, Glenn, how you doing? How's your week? How was the week? How you doing?
Fantastic, Jeff. It's weather's warming up, so no complaints on my end.
Except for the wind and people blowing away. It's been crazy. I got back up the flag, and I'm always like, I had somebody from out of town, Glenn, and they're like, what is this? And I was like, this is springtime in northern Arizona. This is normal. This is normal.
Time for me to finally fly that kite, right? And yeah, get it up in the air. All those times I couldn't.
you'll never get it back, though. Right, yeah. We got an interesting one, and you and I kind of alluded to this the past 2 weeks, but never got to it. It's this Section 230, and I've had on some folks from Congress explain it. Every time I kind of forget the details, though, and I think a good recap of exactly what Section 230, I guess, in the federal law or federal code is. Why don't you give us that 30,000 foot here?
Yeah. So the one of the big portions of Section 230 that everyone focuses in on, I'll read it verbatim. It says, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. So what does that mean in layman's terms? Yeah. That means if, you know, if I post something on Facebook, Facebook is not directly liable for my speech, the content that I provide. So really that was a bill that came out that really allowed a lot of these tech companies in the early 90s or late 90s and early 2000s really to actually be able to launch a service. Because if you think about it, you know, if they were reliable for everything that was on their side or their platform, they wouldn't have grown to nearly what they were today. They would have, you know, been very, they'd be very much a smaller organization. So that's the crux of the Section 230 that most of us, you know, are talking about is, you know, where do we draw that line? You know, what, you know, when are they liable? When are they not liable? What are the limits of that? You know, does that give them immunity from just removing whatever they want or keeping whatever they want? And that's a great conversation because I think when this was enacted, you know, we were in different times than we are today, whereas Facebook, Twitter, and these social media companies, they play a big role in our lives today. And I still remember with Facebook, the first time I used it was like in 2002. My friend was like, hey, let's hop on Facebook. And I was like, Facebook? What's that?
Yeah.
I was like, let's just find him on MySpace. You know, we were looking to find a friend and we found her. And she had her phone number up on Facebook. Anyone could just find it. And I was like, what? What is this site? But that was, you know, 2003. So much has changed since then. And, you know, it's definitely a great conversation for our day.
It went from this small thing that connected people that grew to, I guess, billions of users. Mm-hmm. And it's become an integral part of a lot of people's lives and even businesses as far as advertising and getting their content up there. But the publisher side of this, so you say something on Facebook, Glenn, and it's something egregious that maybe Facebook doesn't agree with, and they could sit back and put their hands up and say, because they're not a publisher, they could say, mm-hmm. It wasn't me, it was Glenn. We're immune to that. You know, yeah, he said a stupid thing that caused a bad whatever. Not our fault. Not our deal. Exactly. So you can say whatever. Yeah. The idea behind it is a open exchange of ideas, and it could be good ideas, bad ideas, but it's to say what you will. But it hasn't turned out like that.
Yeah, and I think at the heart of it, that was the main intent. And then as time went on, they said, well, we got to have some sort of rules in the sandbox, just like how, you know, there's certain limits to our free speech now. There's certain things that you can't say. Obviously, I can't, you know, verbally threaten you because that's a limit of my free speech, right?
Glenn did before Facebook, we came on air, though. He threatened me, but I don't have it recorded. So you can't yell fire in a theater, right?
No, I said, I guarantee we will have a great time out there flying a kite if we go out in a windy day. I felt threatened
because if I fly a kite in this wind, Glenn, I may be dead. So,
so with Facebook, and Twitter, I think they've been evolving as time goes on. Is like, okay, well, where is that? You know, obviously we can't have people who are putting stuff on there that's openly in defiance of current, you know, laws.
Sure,
you know, obviously they can't put in, you know, violent information. They can't have inappropriate content that, you know, can't normally be distributed. But I think what we're seeing now is, you know, they're continuing to evolve that. And the conversation is where do we continue to draw the line? And I think that's where the Section 230, in fact, there's another bill that's coming out in Texas. Actually came out. It's called Senate Bill 12. Are you familiar with that recent iteration? Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. So they are basically coming out and saying that this bill allows, I mean, Twitter and Facebook and social media companies are still privately owned companies, right? They're still either publicly owned or private, but they're still a private corporation.
Yeah.
And so they still have the ability to, you know, remove content. But what this is saying, this SB 12 is basically saying if they block your content, ban your page, or remove you from monetary compensation of your page purely based off of your viewpoint, you know, based off a political viewpoint, whether you say something they agree with or not, and you're not violating those other, you know, clearly defined, you know, areas, like you're not threatening someone, you're not inciting violence, but you just say something that they don't agree with, that you can have legal recourse. Because that's actually something we've been seeing over the last, you know, 6 months to a year, is people that just don't have the same opinions getting removed from these social media platforms and getting demonetized. Well, it's becoming a
Glenn, look at, you know where the power lies, and wherever you stand on this, the president of the United States was removed from social media. And that goes to show you, if that can happen to the president, can happen to any of us. I talk to a lot of people that also have other shows and podcasts, and the constant threat from, let's say, YouTube, Facebook, all these places is removal for opinions. And we see it happen on Twitter with certain tweets. Not to go down a rabbit hole with you here, but if you say anything with regard to a lockdown or the past year or COVID or a vaccine, if you have a difference of opinion and you point out something, you're gone. You are gone. And they're squashing, it seems, these big tech folks like Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Seems like they're squashing that debate, that dialogue. It doesn't seem like it. They are.
Yeah, so it's interesting because my wife is involved in a supplement company called Q Sciences, right? And she can't even post the word Q Sciences because it automatically flags it and thinks it's related to QAnon. And so they've been doing this thing where they will blot out part of the words or intentionally misspell it. So even like you're saying, like vaccine, if you want to post something about information on it, you would literally have to spell it wrong or, you know, change the wording of it because it's most likely going to get flagged and taken down.
Well, Glenn, so, that's probably why a lot of my stuff gets up there because of my my ignorance in spelling. So I see I'm doing it intentionally, folks. When you send me an email saying you spelled something wrong, it's intentional to keep it up there. So I'm going to go with that.
Yeah. So what I want to kind of rein back to is, you know, how do some of these new bills and changes to these current legislations affect these companies' profitability?
Okay.
And does it change them radically to the core? Because social media platforms are something that we as a company are invested in and we think have a lot of growth ahead of them, but these are laws that can make some changes to them. And that my question is, well, what are the changes going to happen and how does that impact the profitability? Because, you know, say this bill out of Texas, you know, a bunch of people get removed and they start suing Facebook, you know, there's a financial loss, you know, that could come into play for some of the social media companies. Yeah. So what does that do for the investors? And that's always the question. I always take my personal opinion and set it aside. Just look at the economics, you know, what are the policies and how does that affect the economics of our nation, you know, certain companies. And so at the end of the day, my job is really just to, you know, get a good investment return for my clients. And, you know, we can do that under a lot of different environments, but this is a great conversation to have because I've been using social media and Facebook for many years, and I'm kind of curious as to, you know, what the future is.
Well, let me ask you this, Glenn, and folks, talking with Glenn Least with WT Wealth Management. Are you guys involved with Facebook? And let's go with Facebook, Twitter, and what's the other one? Instagram. Those are kind of the three big ones. Is that in your fund?
So the ones that we specifically have as of right now, we've had Twitter in the past. We don't have that right now. I think the only social media companies we have are really going to be just like your Google, which owns YouTube, and then Facebook. Those are the two ones that we're still kind of currently in. Yeah.
Well, and the reason why I ask is because if you look at it and you say, how does this impact? I guess there's a couple facets here that I'd like to ask you is, you have a lot of people that say they were leaving Facebook and Twitter because of what happened. You got a lot of conservatives that left the platform, for example, and they went over to Parler and these other platforms. I don't know how many really did. Is it enough to where it eventually affects the value of Facebook, Twitter, Google, for example, where enough people say, I'm done? Or is it just a fly, an annoyance kind of thing to them? It's really nothing. I guess my question is, do they become the future MySpace because of this?
So that's a fantastic question. And I was actually thinking about with, you know, maybe we'll use another company that recently went through some controversy of a lot of people leaving, which was Netflix. So in the last year, people had some controversy over Netflix where they're saying, hey, I'm going to leave Netflix and go to a different provider because they had a difference in the content they were providing at Netflix. And so, you know, at first I thought it was going to be a big impact, but a year later, I would probably say it's probably more like the fly in the ointment sort of thing. And I think that's similar with Facebook is, yes, people are maybe not happy with them, but what are really the alternatives at this point? Until there really becomes a strong alternative that really makes sense, you know, because Parler right now is really not a great alternative to Facebook. I mean, it sounded like it was going to be, but it just hasn't panned out that way. So,
and I never went back on there after they kind of got shut down there and were removed from, what was it, Amazon servers or whatever happened there.
Yeah.
And I think they lost a lot of people there. But let me ask you this. So if, let's just say that people do leave and create the new Facebook, let's say Parler became the new dominant one or some unforeseen company that maybe you know of that, let me know, send me a message and I can drop some money on. But if they became for 5 years from now, that was the place to go. Do you think they would just kind of become like Facebook and Twitter down, even though they say, hey, we're open, we're all into free speech and you can do this and do that, sure, and be what you want and et cetera, et cetera. But wouldn't the financial pressures of all the advertising revenue just, wouldn't they succumb at some point too?
Yeah, so all these companies are for-profit companies. So, you know, even with Facebook, it's profits above free speech. It's always been, you know, so basically they're saying, hey, you know, we want to obviously honor free speech, but at the end of the day, we are, our stake, you know, our main, you know, goal is to deliver a return for our stakeholders and to grow our stock price and be a profitable company. So I think that's always going to be kind of at the helm. It would be nice if they can kind of do two birds with one stone sort of thing, is equally hit both of those and be true to who they are. But I guess it depends on the corporation and what their main goal is. So if a company like Parler said that is absolutely our goal and we're never going to sell out and we're going to stay true to our core values of this is what we're going to do. I mean, that sounds appealing. I've seen a lot of companies start that way and then eventually change over time too. So, yeah. I mean, I guess to answer your question, I guess we'll wait and see. We'll see how kind of all that plays out. But yeah, I mean, the main idea of these companies is, you know, they want to make a profit. They want to provide a great service and sometimes at the expense of, you know, other things too.
Well, yeah. You're just, you can get squashed pretty easily there. All right. We'll see what happens. You know what I think is interesting, and maybe I got to get the legal advice of Jerry Neighbors, who usually sums this stuff up pretty good, but you have the federal Section 230 that's protecting them and like Facebook from not being a publisher, not getting, I got this correct, not being sued for Glenn saying something they don't like or whatever, somebody else. But you have states, now you're saying Texas is going to get on board and try to do something on a statewide basis. So it continues kind of the division among states, because I don't see Section 230 changing on the federal side because there's no will in Congress now or the president. But it could happen on the statewide. So you could have, it could be weird. How do you operate a social media giant with different state laws? How do you set all that up?
Right.
And do the feds trump over the state law? It's an interesting.
Those are great questions. Yeah. And yeah, great legal question. And I foresee that being something that's going to be something we figure out over the next couple of years, especially if you have states kind of adopting those policies. And I think you'll see some more states start to adopt that, but I think they're going to see how Texas plays out first. And if it, you know, really is a benefit to Texas, other states may want to follow suit and vice versa. Other states may say, I don't want to do that at all. That's a nightmare. But I guess we'll wait and see versus some of the federal regulations and how that plays out in the legal system.
And eventually by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, there'll be like 48 members on the Supreme Court or justices. So it'll be interesting to see.
Don't even get me started on that, Jeff.
Yeah, right. All right, Glenn. Hey, good stuff. We'll hit on more stuff next Friday. And folks, you can check out Glenn at WTWealthManagement.com. WTWealthManagement.com. Check that out. And Glenn, hey, have a good weekend. We'll talk with you soon.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
And that's it for this hour. Stick around. We will have Fox News coming up top of the hour, and then we'll get into our weekly roundup, looking back on some of the biggest news stories of the week. We'll do that during the 5 o'clock hour, plus some clips from some of our interviews. Don't go anywhere. If you've missed any of the show this week, you're going to want to get caught up here. And don't forget, if you want to get caught up on full interviews, full podcasts, go to talkwithjeff.com. Talkwithjeff.com. Click on how to listen and subscribe. Hang tight. Back in a minute.